Hey you, and welcome. My name is Mike, and in this old episode, we're going back in time, hopping in the good old time machine, folks, for a nice old story that takes us, meaning you, me, and I guess whoever else is listening, perhaps the dog or the cat or whatever, to very rural Germany, where, in March of 1922, the aftermath of a crime was so insanely vicious. It kicked off a mystery that has lasted more than one of your 100 years. We got one of them enduring mysteries for you, folks, I do declare, yeah, and it stood the test of time. It'll probably be speculated about for over another 100 years. So what we're doing today, we're adding to that list. Let's give it a go. So, the Bavarian hamlet of Hinterkaifeck lies around 43 miles outside of Munich, half a mile behind the small town of, where else but Kaifeck, hence its name. Hinterkaifeck literally means behind Kaifeck. Who invents this stuff? Though I suppose most places are like, this is regular town and this is West Town. So there, resting against the dense forest line, was the Gruber Farm. Built around 1863, the farm had, you know, eventually been passed down to the surviving Gruber, Caselia Gruber. Though she wasn't actually a Gruber yet when, you know, it was passed down to her. She would only get that name after marrying Andreas Gruber. So Andreas and his wife Caselia were living in this farm that had been passed down from her family through generations. And Andreas and Caselia would go on to have a daughter together named Victoria. And Victoria would later marry a man named Carl Gabriel. And Victoria and Carl would go on to have a daughter of their own together, Caselia, named after, well, Caselia the Elder, her own grandmother. Later, Victoria would also have a son named Joseph in 1920, but this was actually long after Carl died in World War I in fighting in France in 1914. So who exactly Joseph's father was is a question we'll come back on to later. Spoiler alert, I guess. That's just as much of a mystery to the horrific crime that's at the center of this story. And of course, right, going through the Gruber family line, which is kind of what I'm doing right now, it goes without saying that they would later have a grandson named Hans, who would go on and take over the Nakatomi Plaza building. I haven't fact-checked that, but it sounds about right. In this house that has been passed down from Caselia's family, you got grandmother and grandfather, Caselia and Andreas, their widowed daughter, Victoria. Her husband, Carl, died in World War I, and then Victoria's two children, one named Caselia, I guess the second, named after her grandmother, daughter of Carl, and then Joseph, son of unknown. Oh, wait, I suppose it's Josef, really, right? Because these are German people? I should really call him Josef. Okay, I guess I'll do that from now on. Sorry, guys. And if you're picturing, you know, on this farm in rural Germany in the 1920s, If you got your rose-tinted, you know, glasses on, you can swiftly take them off. Because this was not a happy time for anybody, let me tell you. Andreas, he was known to be a quiet guy, but often nasty, vindicative, like a real kind of bastard man who, it seems he only got more of a bastard man, like, as he got older. According to those who knew the family, he was pretty racist, like many others, and he blamed the tough financial times after World War I, you know, on minority communities. Wonder if that will come up again in Germany's history. I'm sure he was alone in this. Nobody else was thinking the same thing. And he was known to be, like, overly strict and controlling with his family, despite the Gruber family being pretty wealthy and, like, you know, compared to most around them. I mean, again, this is in a Germany decimated by World War I, so they were, like, doing all right. He was tight, wouldn't spend a penny. I mean, when Andreas and Caselia married back in the day, many said that Andreas only married her so he could get the farm in Hinterkaifeck, right? Like, his reputation was pretty bad, and that there was even rumored that, you know, Andreas and Cazelia had children other than their daughter, Victoria. Just none of the other children survived that long, that they had all died in childbirth. They were such, you know, shitty people. You know, Andreas was such a violent dad, he'd killed his other children. The only one surviving one was Victoria. And there was also rumors that Andreas and his daughter, Victoria, well, there was a bit of a, you know, rumors of incestuous activities between the two of them. Although I suppose I could say at one point it was more than rumors, because both Andreas and Victoria were arrested at one stage and charged with actual incest. They were, in fact, convicted, right? And Andreas would serve a year in prison. Like, charged with incest, though, I mean, why she was charged with it? Because it seems that she was probably the victim of horrific sexual abuse by her own piece of shit dad. I can't imagine she was an active and willing participant in any of this. She still, you know, got a month in prison for that. So, yeah, like prison was, although maybe they're doing a favor by having her in prison for a month so she could get away from that son of a bitch. Anyways, all right, that's the background of this family. So, I mean, to give you a bit of background in the story myself, like, I just started researching into this, you know, doing this podcast episode. I'd always heard of the Hinterkaifeck murders. I didn't actually know anything about them other than that it was a real gruesome scene and a real big mystery to this day about what actually happened. So reading into it and finding out that they, you know, they're kind of bastards who maybe, you know, well, Andreas at least was, who he seems like he had it coming. Bit of a surprise to me, not gonna lie. But yeah, there you go. So, on March 31st, 1922, 63-year-old Andreas and his family were awaiting the arrival of their new live-in maid, 44-year-old Maria Baumgartner. The family, they'd been living without a maid for some time, and their previous maid had suddenly upped and left 5 months earlier. And while, you know, the previous maid, a woman named Reiger, you know, why she left the Gruber family, we were kind of surprised that she just upped and left one day. Well, she would later say she had, you know, it turned out she had actually been lucky by leaving. She would say she had been uncomfortable in the Gruber house in this farm in Hinterkaifeck for some time. And not just because Andreas Gruber was a piece of shit who was probably raping his own daughter. No, she would say there was some spooky shit going on in this farm. She had heard footsteps coming from rooms that should have been empty. She later described an unsettling feeling of being watched. Now, I don't know if any of you guys, again, listening to this, have ever been to this area of Germany, South Germany. I was there once before in Bavaria, a really rural-ass area of it, like not near Munich or anything like that at all. Oh my god, I can't even remember. It was like near Dorlingen or Ducklingen? Eichlingen? Wait, let me... Okay, guys, I'm pausing the podcast episode because I need to find out where it was. Okay, I think it was like Eglingen, right? Which is, I'm looking at a map. Guys, you're getting a full podcast experience here of a guy who's done his research. But I just get things popping into my head. So you're getting them. You're getting them, right? It's near this place called Katzenstein. And all these very German-sounding places. Very beautiful. Imagine like rolling hills. You know, there's bike trails everywhere. So I was kind of just biking around the place, having a good-ass time. I mean, it's kind of really the only thing to do there. But the forests are really, really beautiful, super dense, and you can kind of imagine, like, fairy tale. Like, the place where Grimm's fairy tales would happen in this part of the world. There is kind of something a little bit spooky about some of the woods and forests in these places. They're super dense, they feel super old. You could kind of imagine, like, trolls or witches living in these woods. So, you know, this previous maid who had gotten freaked out in Hinterkaifeck, which was not terribly far from all this, probably kind of believable, I guess. And so, this new maid arriving to this house, 44-year-old Maria Baumgartner, had no idea what she was walking into. And in those 5 months, right between Reiger, the old maid's departure, and Maria Baumgartner's arrival, right, there was a 5 month period where they had no maid, even weirder shit was happening at the Hinterkaifeck farm. Andreas, he would find a set of footprints in the snow right outside his house. He would go around asking family members and neighbors, oh, had you been walking around this area? Nobody had. He could never find out who those prints belonged to. And normally just finding footprints, you wouldn't even think twice of it. You wouldn't, like, right, finding footprints outside your house in the snow half time. You wouldn't even think enough right about it to ask. Well, it was the fact that weird shit had been going on that's what led him to ask. Apparently, Andreas, he was so weirded out by this, he went to a neighbor. And this neighbor said he offered Andreas a shotgun. You know, if he was feeling like something was happening. You know, I mean, probably not something supernatural. But, you know, it was robbers, thieves, burglars staking out your place. You know, do you want a gun for protection? And Andreas refused the offer, telling his neighbor that he wasn't afraid. Another thing that was weird that happened was a key went missing. And Andreas, and, you know, he would ask, right, his wife, Cazelia, his daughter, Victoria, his granddaughter, Cazelia, and his grandson, Josef. Nobody had seen the key. It hadn't been misplaced. And he, you know, Andreas was a pretty stern guy, so you probably wouldn't want to misplace something like that. And he would also find a lock, one to his tool shed. The lock had been interfered with. Some sources say the lock was actually broken. Others just say it had been, you know, somebody had attempted to break the lock. So some really weird stuff had been happening at this farm in Hinterkaifeck. And so Maria Baumgartner, the new live-in maid, arrived to the farm on the morning of March 31st. Maria, her sister, was accompanying her, bringing all her shit, I guess. That's exactly what Maria's sister was there to do. She helped Maria settle in, unpack, and then Maria's sister left, wishing her well. Little did she know that would be the last time she would see her sister Maria alive ever again. Because in the early hours of the 1st of April at around 3 a.m., so we're talking the very next early morning, a farmer on his way home was passing by the farm in Hinterkaifeck, and he claimed he had seen two men on the edge of the woodline near the farm. And as I said, guys, these are very, very dense, thick forests. And so this farmer passing by, when he, you know, saw these two men, and when they spotted him looking at them, they turned away as to not be identified. And later, that very same day, the 1st of April, two coffee salesmen stopped by the Gruber farmstead hoping to take the family's order, but received no answer despite several attempts. And they left the Gruber farm in Hinterkaifeck without seeing anybody there at all. But they did see smoke coming from the chimney. And it appeared as though someone had very recently fed the livestock on the farm. All was quiet for the next few days. And then, on the 4th of April, a repairman visited the farm for a pre-arranged appointment. The repairman was due to tend to some machinery for Andreas Gruber. But, like the coffee salesman before him, he couldn't get any response after knocking, and he didn't see anybody there. Any of the six occupants, family of five, and now six with Maria. They never showed up to Sunday service, you know, at the local church, even though Victoria, she sang in the choir. And the younger Cazelia, remember, the granddaughter, she never showed up for school. Neighbors would pass by. They, you know, because nobody had seen them, and, no, nobody there. Nobody there. And finally, enough concern would spark that three neighbors, Lawrence Schittelbauer, Michael Pohl, and Jakob Sigel, decided, we're going to check in the family. This is getting too weird. If they knew what they were walking into, probably wouldn't have bothered. Arriving at the Gruber farm, the tree men found the farm quiet and seemingly empty. They also noticed the broken lock on the tool shed that Andreas had earlier been, you know, mentioned and mentioned to people about, that somebody had tried to break into the tool shed. The tree men investigated further and found the door to the barn slightly ajar. Inside, they found a scene so horrific. This is why Hinterkaifeck is famous. Barely hidden under a thin layer of straw were the bloody, battered bodies of Andreas, Cazelia the older, Victoria, Cazelia the younger. The men then accessed the house, where they found the bodies of Maria Baumgartner in her bedroom, and covered by one of his mother's dresses was the body of 2-year-old Josef, still in his crib in the mother's room. Autopsies would later be performed on each of the victims. Each had been killed by blunt force trauma to the head, though the weapon being likely a pickaxe or something like that. The killer hadn't brought the weapon with them, and though investigators couldn't find it at the time, the likely weapon was suggested to be one Andreas Gruber had made himself. The barn and the house were bloodbaths. The elder Cazilia also displayed signs of violent strangulation, but she too had ultimately been killed by severe and brutal head trauma. The choking was more likely an attempt to subdue her. She'd been hit about 7 times in the head, 2 of which fatal. Andreas Gruber, he had been beaten so badly that his cheekbones were clearly visible through the cuts on his face, or rather where his face should have been. Maria Baumgartner, the maid, and 35-year-old Victoria, they showed the same star-shaped wounds to the head as with the rest of the victims from the blunt force trauma, and the youngest, Josef, had been killed by a single blow. Probably worst of all, though, was the fate of 7-year-old Cazilia Gabriel. Whereas the other family members and Maria died of their injuries almost immediately, Cazilia, the 7-year-old, took hours to succumb to her horrific wounds, all the while trapped beneath the bodies of her closest relatives. She likely died from a combination of shock and a severe trauma to the head. Most grim of all details, though, were in her hands. Grasped tightly between her fingers were thick bunches of her own hair. She had ripped out her own hair, lying under the bodies of her family for hours. The bodies in the barn had been covered with a thin layer, you know, of straw, hay. The body of Josef was covered with one of his mother's dresses. And Maria Baumgartner, found in her own bedroom, she was covered with a sheet. And the covering of victims' bodies, it's usually done in cases where the killer knew the victims well and had a relationship, you know, with them, hence wanting to cover up the act, not wanting to see them. But goddamn, who knows? So, what happened to the Grubers? Well, there's a lot of theories. But first, the investigation. The investigation was headed by Inspector George Reingruber, and it was hampered from the outset due to the number of people who passed through the scene before the police could get there. Because the police, you know, this is, as I said, this is in the boonies, folks. The police had to come from Munich to Hinterkaifeck. You know, Kaifeck didn't have its own police force, and so the investigators took hours to get there. This is days after they'd been killed, and multiple people had, well, already passed through the scene, knocking on their door for prearranged meetings, but also now that the bodies are found, more people are showing up. I mean, by the time the police arrived, pretty much everybody in the area had been and had a goo. So, as you can imagine, unsurprisingly, right, the first theory is robbery gone wrong. People had been watching the Gruber farm for days, perhaps weeks, and then finally broke in, murdered them, killed them, to steal their shit, right, whatever. Because as I said, the Grubers were pretty, they were known to be pretty well off, even though Andreas didn't spend a penny because he was a real bastard. I mean, he was always a real bastard. I guess that's not one of the reasons. He has enough reasons to be a real bastard, I guess. Not spending money, not really one of them, I suppose. But the theory of this being a robbery gone wrong was thrown out almost immediately. There was so much valuables and large sums of money left in the house that hadn't been taken. Another theory thrown out and then eliminated equally as quickly was a murder-suicide. You know, Andreas or Victoria, they just lost it. They killed the rest of their family before killing each other or themselves in some kind of, you know, suicide. Maybe that was actually one of the theories, that Andreas and Victoria, right, the incestuous dad and daughter, they went insane together, had a suicide pact, and they killed each other. But that was just local gossip and rumor and general bitchiness. And also just the fact of what was done to their own bodies, It seems unlikely you would do it to yourself. Plus, each body had been covered with some straw and stuff like that. So, yeah, the doing it to yourself part seemed extremely unlikely. Now, one of the most popular theories, right, about this case is the Progger. The Progger theory, right? For those of you who don't know, and honestly, I didn't until I looked into this, a Progger is someone who jumps from house to house, living in a house undetected by the actual residents, you know, of the property. It's kind of like a horror story, really. You know those stories of there was a guy living in the attic the whole time? Right, that's actually a pretty famous one, wasn't it? In like Japan or something, a woman noticed food kept going missing from her fridge. So she set up a security camera and it turned out there was a guy living in the crawl space or something like that, like freaking you out, watching you the whole time in your own house. Scary shit. And as I said, yes, there is cases of this, you know, actually happening, right? Quite a lot. Sometimes they can be just a homeless guy, right? Taking up residence, kind of like squatting, using just an occupied house, right? Maybe the owners went on holiday, so they just take up residence in your house while you're gone. Others, though, as I said, are the kind of horror story types, which kind of give me chills as I even tell them. The CCTV footage of unidentified figures standing over sleeping occupants, you know, ghostly shapes slinking down from loose ceiling tiles while a family is asleep, stealing food and money. Yeah, sleep well. Well. In the search of the farm at Hinterkaifeck after the crime, police found scraps of food and human shit in the attic of the farmhouse, leading, you know, police to speculate that the perpetrator could have been there the entire time, you know, unknown and undiscovered, but alongside the family for days, perhaps even weeks before they were killed. With some of the things that was going on, it would make sense, right? Keys stolen, locks broken into, mysterious footprints. Remember the previous maid, Reigert, said, you know, footsteps, ooh, weird shit's going on, which could be explained by somebody being there the entire time. They also later found several loose tiles around the house, you know, like in the roof, that would have enabled the killer to watch the family as they went about their day. Also adding fuel to this theory was the idea, you know, they had seen smoke coming from the chimney after the murders, that the livestock had you know, been fed, right? Even days after the murder. That was really, really weird. And the Gruber family also had a dog, which they used, as most dogs are used in these kind of areas and farms and stuff, as a burglar alarm, right? So this would have had to been done by somebody who was in the area, who smelled like them, who knew, who had been there the whole time so that the dog would adjust to them. That's a theory, I think a strong one, but there are other suspects. And the most likely suspects actually emerged very early in the original investigation, and all were men in Victoria's life. Now remember, Victoria had married a guy named Carl Gabriel, and together they had a daughter, Cazelia. However, Carl Gabriel, he went off, you know, World War One, the outbreak of World War One. He was drafted into the war and he was sent to France, never to return. His body was never even recovered. He was killed, likely in the trenches, in 1914. However, after Carl's death, Victoria had a very brief relationship with a guy named Lawrence Schittelbauer, who would be a guy who would, you know, he was one of the guys who discovered the scene at the Gruber farm. By the way, Lawrence Schittelbauer, he was also the guy Andreas Gruber told that he thought there was something weird going on. Lawrence Schittelbauer was the guy who offered them a shotgun. But Victoria and Lawrence's relationship, it came to an end after the accusations of incest came out. So he was like, yep, I really do not want to have anything to do with this. Although another rumor is that Andreas was the one who banned Victoria from pursuing a relationship with Lawrence Schittelbauer. Apparently he wanted his daughter Victoria all to himself. You know, one of the biggest mysteries around the Gruber farm is who was Josef's biological father, because, well, Victoria's husband Carl, he was killed years before Josef was born. Josef was born in 1920. Carl killed in France, 1914. But it's never actually been discovered who his dad was. And he was born in 1920. He was 2 years old when he was killed. Victoria herself, she claimed that Lawrence Schittelbauer was the father of the son. Lawrence Schittelbauer publicly denied paternity of the child. Although, I mean, come on. I mean, okay, he said he wasn't, so that sums it up there to me. Lauren Schittelbauer pointed the finger at who the father of Josef was, at Andreas, that Josef's grandfather, you know, as a result of the incestuous relationship that was going on here. Now, Lauren Schittelbauer, he would later retract his claims, and he would officially acknowledge paternity, and he would even agree to pay child support to Victoria. Though he said, I'm still not the dad, guys. I guess I'll just, you know, do this anyway, for some reason. So after Lawrence Schittelbauer's relationship with Victoria came to an end, either by his own, you know, want, or that Andreas forbade Victoria and Lawrence to be together, Lawrence Schittelbauer would go on to marry a new woman. Now together, so they would marry, but they would tragically lose a child together. So another theory is that Lawrence Schittelbauer's grief, mixed with, you know, his unwillingness to pay child support to Victoria, were a possible motive for him wanting to kill the family. Though, I mean, who knows? Seems a bit like overkill. You know, a little bit. But one thing was that when the tree men arrived to the farm that day, Lawrence Schittelbauer being one of them, you know, when they would discover the scene and the murders, the gruesome murders, the house was locked. And the two other men would say, Lawrence, he produced the key and unlocked the house door. Was that the key that Andreas claimed had disappeared earlier before? Who knows? Whom knows? I don't know. Another popular theory at the time was, popular suspect at the time, was Carl Gabriel, Victoria's husband, who died in World War One, 8 years previously. See, this is a great one. I actually kind of like this one because his body was never recovered. So people think he survived, or he faked his own death, or that he'd been held in a Soviet internment camp. Which doesn't make any sense at all, because it's claimed he died in France and, okay. But that, you know, he was a shadowy figure. As you can imagine, somebody with like a scarred up face from the war. And he then decided to, I guess, go back and kill everybody. It's a good theory, but somehow I don't think it's true. In 1951, a woman named Crescentia Mayer, on her deathbed, claimed to her pastor that her brothers, Anton and Adolf Gump, had committed the murders. She earlier had tried to tell another pastor of her beliefs, and apparently she told several people of her beliefs over the years that her brothers had been the ones to commit the murders at Hinterkaifeck. But investigating them, it seems there was very little, you know, there. Adolf Gump had at some point been in a relationship with Victoria, and their possible suspect as being the father of Josef, but no, not really. It seems there was very little evidence. He briefly dated Victoria. End of story. Rieger, the former maid, you know, the one who had left 5 months before the murders, she herself would come out with some suspects. Basically, she you know, some people who lived nearby had broken in and stolen some items in the from the house in 1920, 2 years before. And so she was claiming, oh, they must have come back, you know, for more, for vengeance. In fact, one of the people she was claiming, a guy named George, he had carved the wooden handle of the mattock that would be the murder weapon that was ultimately determined to be the murder weapon. A mattock, by the way, it's essentially a pickaxe. That's really essentially the same thing as a, think of a pickaxe, that's a mattock. But he had carved the handle in it, and that was what gave the victims the star-shaped injury to their heads as they were beaten to him. And so they were like, well, you made the murder weapon, you must have done it, you also would have known where it was, yada yada. It seems very unlikely that, you know, that would have been it. But that was really it, and kind of still is. Who committed the horrific murders at Hinterkaifeck remains unknown. Who those two people who were in the, near, you know, near the woods watching the place, who didn't want to be identified, who they were, remains unknown. Was there somebody secretly living in the house? So much we don't know. And the fact that, you know, with every year, it gets harder to tell because we're 1 year away from anything, ever knowing anything. Like in 2007, a German police academy announced they were taking on the Hinterkaifeck murders as a cold case, and they were going to look at the crime through the lens of modern criminology. Sadly, however, not a whole lot of evidence survived in the years since the murders. The farm was actually burned down after the horrible events. It was burned down in 1923. However, rather than obscuring evidence, the burning down of the farm actually kind of helped out a little bit. They found the mattock, the pickaxe, which is believed, you know, have been a murder weapon. Not proven to be the murder weapon, but the same type. It had the same star-shaped handle on it. They also found a penknife that appeared to have been hidden in the barn. Though they couldn't be tested, they did help, you know, bridge some gaps in the investigation. In fact, the investigators in 2007, they actually came up with a theory about the suspect they all agreed on, though they refused to name the person publicly out of respect for the person's living relatives. And get this, kind of adding insult to the already nightmarish events of what happened and their grisly deaths, all members, all victims, buried without their heads, if you can believe that. In their desperation to solve the mystery of what happened at Hinterkaifeck, the court physician at the time, back in 1922, asked, he removed the skulls of each of the victims. The skulls, they were then sent to Munich to be studied by a psychic. I guess they're gonna, you know, mentally figure to solve this shit. If you can believe it, sit down, because this is shocking. The psychic couldn't tell them anything, and then each of the skulls was lost during, you know, the carnage that would be World War II. And so, that's the mystery of Hinterkaifeck, the Hinterkaifeck farm. I think the frogging one is probably the most likely. It's extremely, though, creepy and scary as shit, but who knows? And why? We also don't know. It's really sick. I mean, Andreas Gruber sounds like a guy who had a lot of enemies, but enough to do what was done and to just murder everybody. Like, we're talking about a 2-year-old child here. I mean, come on. You could have, if you wanted Andreas Gruber dead, you probably could have gotten him alone by himself by just luring him out. But it was an insane amount of violence that night. Like, this is up there, you know, with the Keddy Cabin murders, the Dyatlov Pass incident, for just sheer insanity of mystery. But I'll leave it to you if you want to look into this further. Go on. Here, listen, thank you so much for listening to this whole episode of the That Chapter podcast. I appreciate it and you greatly. Check out new episodes. You know, I got these new episodes coming out of the podcast every week. And also check out the That Chapter YouTube channel for a little bit more if you want to. But until the next one, please take care of each other and yourselves, because I love you. Mike out.